Hi, it's Mike. It's Saturday. It's the Saturday show. We're breaking format a little bit as I bring you an entirely different radio show, one that I was a guest on, the name of the show, from radio station WILL, which is Illinois Public Radio. The name of the show is The 21st. And if you're saying, oh, 21st, because Illinois was the 21st state to join the union, you are, of course, correct. Good job. And speaking of course correct, the question is, should NPR course correct? The name of the show, the title of the specific segment was Reflecting on Criticism that NPR is Biased. And it does so in a very public radio way, which is to say, very thoroughly and politely. Perhaps you will find more polite than I was being as I tangled a bit with Eric Deggans, NPR's TV and media critic. An NPR critic and a critic of NPR. Also on the show, Mike Jansen, the digital editor of Current, which covers public media. And I thought a very good guest, Jared Johnson, the general manager of WVIK. Those serve a station serving the Quad Cities, which of course are Rock Island, Moline, East Moline, Davenport. Never forget Bettendorf, Iowa. Are those five cities in the Quad Cities, you might ask? Yeah, but you know, we're talking about Illinois and Iowa, which are in the Big Ten, which has like, what are they up to, like 13 schools now? So we can understand all of this. Join host Brian Mackey, who invited me on the show and is, I believe, a GIST listener. A great public radio host, it turns out. And let me know what you think of this show. I am at, or the show, our show is at The GIST at MikePesca.com. I'd be interested in hearing your feedback, on hearing who you think had good points, if I made my point, if you thought I was a little rude, what you thought of the other guests. All right, here now. NPR and Bias from WILL, Illinois Public Radio. Brian Mackey, take it away.
From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Every week, 42 million Americans go to their radios or phones or whatever devices to hear NPR news magazines, podcasts, and talk shows.
Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us here and now.
What's good? You're listening to Code Switch. I'm Gene Demby.
And I'm B.A. Parker.
What's the legacy of Vietnam-era protests?
For Monday, April 29th, it's All Things Considered.
This is Planet Money from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait. Don't tell me.
From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life. I'm Eric Glass. Stay with us.
Some sounds from the public radio cinematic universe, if you will. Here in Illinois, many of you rely on your NPR member stations for local news, especially in this era in which newspapers have been strip-mined to a vanishing point. In fact, seven NPR stations around Illinois carry this program. But you may have read NPR is under fire. Earlier this month, a now former editor there, Yuri Berliner, wrote an essay accusing the leadership and staff of letting a progressive mindset distort their coverage at a cost of millions of listeners. Berliner spent decades at NPR, but after saying his concerns were not heeded internally, he wrote an essay for the online news site The Free Press. He also talked about it with Free Press publisher Barry Weiss on her podcast, Honestly.
At one point, I got so frustrated with what I saw was the sort of the lack of different perspectives in our coverage that I decided to look at voter registration among our staff. And what I found was 87 registered Democrats on our editorial staff, zero Republicans. I presented this at a all hands or a large news meeting, and I said, "Hey, look, something's gone wrong here."
Berliner says NPR's coverage has increasingly reflected a rigid progressive ideology. And he argued that the network's quest for greater diversity in its workforce, a priority under former chief executive John Lansing, has not been accompanied by a diversity of viewpoints. In response, Edith Chapin, NPR's chief news executive, wrote in a memo to staff, quote, "We're proud to stand behind the exceptional work that our desks and shows do to cover a wide range of challenging stories. We believe that inclusion among our staff, with our sourcing, and in our overall coverage is critical to telling the nuanced stories of this country and our world." Then, after all that, last week, the New York Times published a long story headlined Inside the Crisis at NPR, detailing a period of layoffs, cancellations, and discontent at the broadcaster. All that led some politicians on the right to renew calls for defunding public media. We know many of you also have thoughts on this. We heard from a lot of you by text, and we want to hear from you now at 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455. We are turning into the waves, talking about all of this ourselves. Back when ABC News was sold in the 1980s, Ted Koppel opened his evening broadcast by paraphrasing the comic strip Pogo. We have seen the news, and it is us. We begin with a reporter who's been covering all this for Current Magazine, a public media trade publication. Mike Jansen is a digital editor there. Mike, welcome to the 21st Show.
Great to be here.
Also with us, Jared Johnson, the general manager of WVIK-FM, the NPR member station in the Quad Cities, and one of the seven on which our show can be heard. Jared, welcome to you as well.
It's very exciting to be here today.
And in a short while, we're going to add the perspectives of two NPR contributors, current and former. But for now, I do want to begin, Jared, with you. You're the general manager of an NPR station. You're on the Illinois-Iowa border, two very different landscapes, politically at least. What was your response to this essay from Yuri Berliner?
My response? Not a lot of surprise. And I would say, you know, we didn't really hear back. We didn't hear a whole lot of response necessarily from our audience either. These are conversations, I think, when you are in an environment like ours that is kind of very diverse and like historically, like, for instance, you know, the state of Iowa voted twice for Obama and then followed that up by voting twice for Trump. I mean, there are a lot of diverse opinions in the Quad Cities. And so these are thoughts that have been shared with us before. So it was, you know, to have them brought out in a public forum like this was interesting. I got to have some good coffees with even with some donors of ours who have voiced these things before. But in the end, I think we fall back on the NPR does excellent journalism, probably the best in the field, definitely in radio, radio news. And, all good organizations can do a little reflection. I think this will be good for us in the long run to have these conversations. And we have one of the best products out there, one of the most trusted brands in the country. So not a lot new. And I think a lot of good can come out of this.
Mike Jansen, you're with Current. I mentioned it's a public media trade publication. What has been the fallout of Berliner's article?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of takes. I think the rate of takes has been, you know, at least one or two a day since it came out. There have been a lot, you know, as you've noted, there's been coverage in the New York Times, a lot of attention focused on NPR. There's even been some attention focused on previous comments made on social media by their new CEO, Catherine Maher, that were of a liberal nature, left-leaning nature. And as you mentioned, the pushes to defund NPR. But in terms of, you know, going beyond just the attention and the media coverage, I think the actual impact is kind of like what Jared's saying, maybe not as present and not as known yet. I personally think the efforts to defund NPR are probably not going to happen. That kind of thing has come up before in other years and for other reasons. It's never succeeded. Efforts to defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which provides support to the public media system, have not panned out. Trump, when he was president, tried to zero it out, and that did not occur. NPR has, I think, defended themselves. They've stood by the work that they are doing. I think that his essay tended to probably, if you already were of the frame of mind that he's getting at, you were more likely to agree with it. I don't know if it would really change a lot of minds or make people who generally don't have a problem with NPR's coverage to suddenly think, hey, maybe he has a point here. So is it really swaying opinions that much? I'm doubtful that it is.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about the structure here. We did have one text message that came in and somebody had thought that Biden had appointed the new head of NPR, which is obviously not how any of this works. Maybe you can just talk about what it means for, you know, when people say the federal government funds NPR, and they call for defunding it.
Yeah. So it's more complicated than just saying no money for NPR, because the way things work is, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is an independent nonprofit that receives an annual appropriation from Congress. And they then divide that money up among the public broadcasting stations around the country, TV, radio, and some do both, as you might know. And they do give a small amount of money directly to NPR, but most of it gets to NPR by actually going through the stations. The stations receive money and then they pay NPR for the programming. So I know that one piece of legislation that's been proposed from one of the Republican lawmakers who's saying defund NPR would actually try to target just the money that goes to NPR through that funding process. It wouldn't end all funding for public media, but it would just say none of the money that stations get can be used to buy NPR's programming. Like I said, I don't think this has a lot of chance of actually happening, but that is the approach that at least this lawmaker is taking.
Mike Jansen, what do you think? Can you talk about that? How important is the federal funding component for what you do at WVIK?
I think any of those efforts, I think, would actually kind of go the wrong way. And I think it's mostly because people don't understand exactly how we're funded. Like when that comes to us, we then choose what programming to buy that we think most properly fits the Quad Cities and what best serves our listening audience. And there aren't a lot of other options out there there are no other options out there that are as good as NPR, period. Even if they targeted the NPR money, I would probably spend my other money on that. What you would see go away, if anything was cut, would be most likely local reporting. You'd see we'd have to cut in like the local newsroom. We'd have to cut like even maybe on some of our other services that we do here in town, whether it's our emergency alert stuff or, our reading services for the blind or like our classical music service, It would not have the impact on NPR I think they think it would, and it would have a huge impact on local news, which already is in trouble. I mean, we all know that newspapers are closing up, radio news station newsrooms are going away. There are a lot of news deserts out there, and this would just exacerbate that problem.
And I'm sorry, in the spirit of corrections, I called you Mike, didn't I? And you are Jared. My apologies for that. Let's make things
That's fine.
Let's make things even more confusing now. And I'm going to introduce. So we're talking with Mike Jansen, who's a reporter at Current, and Jared Johnson, who's the general manager at WVIK, Quad Cities Public Radio. And we're going to bring two additional voices into the conversation now. People who have previously worked with or at NPR on a national scale. Mike Pesca is the host and founder of The Gist, which bills itself as the longest running daily news podcast. I am a subscriber. Before that, he was for many years an NPR reporter and contributor. Mike, welcome to the 21st show. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me on.
Also with us, Eric Deggans, TV critic and media analyst at NPR. And we do want to be clear, he's reflecting his own perspectives today. He's not here as an NPR spokesperson for NPR leadership or editors or anything like that. But Eric, welcome to you. Thank you for making time as well.
Yeah, thanks for making that clear. I'm speaking just for myself. I don't supervise anybody in NPR. I don't really direct coverage besides my own. I'm just speaking as someone who works at, who has done work, and as someone who has covered media for many years and has seen some of the larger issues at play that we're all struggling with.
Yeah, great. All right. So let's talk about Mike Pesca. What was your initial response to Urie's article? And maybe we should disclose, I think you were edited by him when you were at NPR.
Yes, he was essentially my permanent backup editor because there weren't too many people at NPR who knew sports. And for 7 years, I was a sports reporter, and he was a very good editor. And we would talk about these issues from time to time. Here's my bottom line. I love NPR. I worked at NPR. My radio station, actually, it's my Amazon Alexa, is still set to play the NPR newscast, which is excellent. I want NPR to be better and to serve the public more and to be more popular. So to put some numbers on, I'm going to say the crisis at NPR, they've experienced a 30% decline in listenership. They've also, from about 2019 to the last public filings. they've also experienced a pretty large drop in podcasting, which is especially concerning considering that this was to be the way in to reach youthful listeners. The finances, which aren't necessarily a reflection of popularity, though in this play, in this case kind of are down from, I think, 135 million raised to about 100 million raised. And these track the general economy, but NPR was hit worse. Now, you might say, okay, all broadcast media is down. But when you compare NPR to TV, NPR is down a lot more. When you, and I think this is the best comparison, compare NPR to commercial radio, all we've become fractured, we've become siloed, and the pandemic got in the way of drive time listening habits. But commercial radio, depending on how you measure it, is down in the low, low double digits. And like I said, NPR is down 30%. And I know you have the manager of a local station, WVIK, and I suppose if I was working for him, I'd be heartened by the non-alarmist nature of what he's saying, but I think everyone in NPR and everyone in public radio should be alarmed. There were job cuts, and friends of mine got fired at WNYC, WBEZ, at WAMU. They pretty much pulled the plug on an entire branch of programming. And the reason is, and the thesis is, NPR programming is becoming much less popular. People who liked NPR, loved NPR, like it less, and they haven't been able to replace them with new people. And when you default to things like, well, you know, many of our listeners didn't call and complain, that's because you've lost 30% of your listening. And sorry, Jared, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers for your station, so maybe you've retained a much greater number. And it wouldn't surprise me if you did, because people in places like the Quad Cities use NPR differently. But my thesis, and we could talk about this, the giant decline in NPR listenership must be tied to the programming. It is worse than in all other commercial media and commercial broadcasting, and the programming has changed. And I could point out my thesis for the different ways that NPR has driven away listenership, but that's what I think is going on.
Well, let me ask you to put a pin in that. And unfortunately, the way NPR broadcasts work is because we're on multiple stations, we are on a fixed clock on our program, which means we need to take a break at 11:22 and 30 seconds past the hour if you're listening to us live on Tuesday morning. So let me just reintroduce our conversation. Before that, we are talking with Mike Pesca, host and co-founder of the Daily News podcast, The Gist. We're going to hear from Eric Deggans right on the other side of this break, who's a TV critic and media analyst at NPR. We're also talking with Mike Jansen, a reporter at Current, the public media trade publication, and Jared Johnson, general manager at Quad Cities Public Radio, WVIK-FM. And we invite you to join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We are going to continue this conversation after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about recent criticism of NPR, as well as what some have called a crisis at NPR, declining listenership. A lot of this was set off by an essay written by a now former editor at NPR, Yuri Berliner, who wrote a piece published in the Free Press. By the way, we'll have a link to that at our website, 21stshow.org, if you want to read it yourself. Basically accusing NPR of letting a progressive mindset distort its coverage at a cost of millions and millions of listeners. And we're talking about this with Mike Jansen, who's a digital editor at Current Magazine, the public media trade publication, Jared Johnson, general manager of WVIK-FM, the NPR member station in the Quad Cities, also Mike Pesca, host and founder of The Gist, the daily news podcast. Before that, for many years, he was an NPR reporter and a producer at NPR shows. Also, Eric Deggans, TV critic and media analyst at NPR, although he is here today just on his own perspectives. He's not officially representing NPR. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Eric, you didn't get a chance to weigh in before the break there. What was your top line reaction to Berliner's article, or what Mike Pesca had to say about it before the break?
Yeah, there's been a lot said here and a lot to respond to. So first, I will say that I'm not here to pretend that NPR doesn't have its own issues and that we're not every day concerned about making sure that we're doing the best job covering the news that we can do, and that we're always talking about how can we do things better, what are our internal issues that we can correct to make that better. I will say that Yuri's article was a bad faith argument built on inaccuracies, lack of context, and misinformation. There's been a ton of people who've done analysis pointing out all the incorrect statements, how he's linked to articles but mischaracterized what those articles actually said, how he revealed information from staff meetings or internal communications that were also not placed in their full context. And a lot of what was in that column left out a lot of important context. I don't want to bore everybody by going chapter and verse, but it's hard to have an honest and insightful conversation about what's going on at NPR when it starts with an incredibly bad faith and unfair argument, which was that column. NPR has a complex structure, and everybody, every listener experiences a slightly different version of NPR because of the impact of the member stations and the context and the content that they provide. And so someone may listen in St. Louis and think they know what NPR is covering, but they have a different experience than somebody who listens in New York City or here in Tampa, Florida, where I live. So it's even hard for people to know. And what's obvious to me from Yuri's piece is that it's even hard for somebody who works at NPR to know how we cover things and how much we have covered things and how hard we have tried to cover things. Now, I'm not an expert on statistics. I don't have all the numbers at my beck and call that Mike presented. But I will point out that commercial radio has been contracting for decades. And so it was already diminished. And comparing it to NPR, I think, is not an apples to apples comparison. And I'll also say that NPR was elevated. We saw our listenership elevated during the pandemic, because people were kind of stuck at home and they were interested in news. And we saw our listenership elevated, you know, when there was a highly competitive presidential election as well. All those things, you know, there's a lot of context. There's a lot of things that might affect our listenership that are hard to parse out when you just look at specific numbers. What's the effect of people shifting their listenership from terrestrial radio to online sources? What's the effect of the increased competition in the podcast industry? There's way more competition now than there was even 2 or 3 years ago. There's so much that we need to sort of think about and include and consider. And you know, Mike may have numbers that I'm not aware of, but in all of these pieces I've seen, I haven't seen anybody connect what their criticisms are of our coverage. Show me data, show me something that shows that resulted in people leaving NPR because of our coverage. I it's possible that it may have happened, but what I'm seeing is people say, I have this criticism of NPR coverage, and their revenue's gone down and their audience has gone down. By the way, many other news outlets have had the same kinds of declines. What are the things that connect those two things and say, because this happened, this thing is happening. I'm not so sure that that evidence is that strong. On top of all of this, though, I don't want to pretend that there aren't questions to ask about how we do things. Of course there are, but it has become harder to have those conversations because it started with such an off base and bad faith argument.
Yeah, I have heard that critique. I think even going to the Free Press, which is a website run by Barry Weiss, which a lot of people who are of a more progressive mindset are not fans of hers, and I think that even the choice of his outlet, some have criticized.
I wouldn't even say that.
Okay,
all you have to do is look at the piece and what it asserts, and then ask yourself, how is it proven? How does he know the voter registrations of the people that he cites? Why doesn't he include people who registered and gave no party? There's several people who work in the Washington office who say they register that way, including Steve Inskeep, one of our top anchors. They're not included in this figure that he cites, and we don't even know how he came up with it. There's so many things in that piece.
Yeah.
That just don't make sense, or were miscited, or were inaccurate. And
well, of course, living in a place like D.C.,
and so
it's
I'd
hard
rather,
to, yeah.
You know, I don't want to, you know, the debate about that platform can be had somewhere else. I think the problem is that, you know, this discussion is centered on a piece where the criticisms are kind of off base, and I wish that we had started this discussion talking about criticisms made in good faith that are actually accurate.
Well, Mike Pesca, let me ask you about that. You used to have a regular feature on your program. Is that baloney? I'm going to sanitize the title for public radio listeners. What do you think about the connection? I mean, so in a way, Uri is making a hypothesis that this is his idea of why NPR has seen its decline in listenership. What do you think of his hypothesis, and what's yours?
Yeah, I disagree with what Eric is saying. I don't think it was a bad faith argument. It was an earnest argument. And let us not take all the listeners' time to rebut or discuss what inaccuracies there were. I would say the only thing that borders on an inaccuracy is he described the Mueller investigation as not having proved collusion. I would not put it that way. I would say that Mueller didn't find that there were acts that were chargeable. But just to take another example, Eric has made a very large deal here and on Twitter about Uri's finding, his journalistically sound finding, that the registration of NPR employees in Washington, D.C. is 87 Democrat and 0 Republican. To me, that is a data point. It is not the end all be all. I am a registered independent. I don't know if I would be I definitely wouldn't be a registered Republican in Washington, D.C. You're disenfranchising yourself. But I do not think that it is leaving things out or trying to mislead the public or in any other way not to have the obligatory or perhaps obligatory preface of those who registered for a party. The breakdown is 87 Democrats, 0 Republican. It's just a data point, and it's not inaccurate, even though I guess Eric was trying to cast some doubt.
We don't know that it's accurate because we don't know how he came up with it.
He looked up people's names and he put it through the publicly available registry. It was fact checked by the Free Press. I don't understand why a journalist would just say, we don't know if it's accurate. Why didn't you do any research to rebut the accuracy?
I've seen a lot of people dispute whether or not that makes sense. We have a lot of people who work in the Washington Bureau who live
not how facts
in
work.
Washington,
all right, let me jump in
Maryland.
And they said they're Republicans.
And if you have a newsroom, I mean, yeah. our content office includes over 600 employees. And there are way more than 87 people who work in Washington. I mean, if a whole bunch of them are not registered to any party because as journalists, they don't want to register for any party, doesn't that kind of put the lie to what he's saying?
No, it's not a lie. And it's not.
All right, so I'm going to break in here. I'm going to post privilege. I'm going to break in here and say I personally was not impressed by that data point because, as Mike pointed out, if you live in Washington, D.C., and you're not voting in the Democratic primary, you're not really making a vote that's going to count for anything. So not an impressive point. I do want to talk about the content, though, because we had listeners who wrote in to tell us that they thought John in Harvard, for example, Harvard, Illinois, said, gee, has there been any hard left turn at NPR? It's so hard to tell. He's being sarcastic. There are some emojis indicating that. I like to sum up what's happened at NPR with noting that NPR endlessly has people on to tell us, quote, gender and race are made up constructs and fabrications of racist white people, unquote. And because they are made up, we must talk about them endlessly and constantly because nothing is more important than a made up paradigm of gender and race. So let's keep talking about it and on and on. The corollary to that is everything must always stem from racist, sexist white people's bad intent. He goes on in this vein and ends by saying, good luck trying to get your nearly non-existent black, brown, trans, etc. listeners to cough up money at your next pledge drive. All right, that is a very spicy take. We did hear other perspectives, though. David in Mount Morris, Illinois said, I've lived all over Northern Illinois because of that. The programs on different NPR stations vary. So yes, I have noticed a change, but all media outlets have an agenda and a target audience. However, NPR fails in the center category, falls in the center category, in my opinion. WNIJ, the station in DeKalb where he listens, and NPR make journalists corrections. Admit mistakes if they get a story or fact wrong. They inform listeners that if they are reporting on a business or personality contributes to programming or the station, that sort of thing. Jared Johnson, let me ask you, you mentioned you've heard some of these same complaints from listeners and supporters of your station. Talk about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think listening to this conversation, one of the things that I just want to bring up and kind of like where I feel like there's actually some common ground here is that one of the things that not taken into account in this is the overall, I mean, A, like Eric mentioned, the shifting media landscape, which is just very hard for any place to navigate and the patterns listing, but also the shifting political landscape. I think there are a lot of people, honestly, in both parties that feel kind of disenfranchised now, both by their own parties and then by their chosen media outlets. And we've all become increasingly siloed. What I keep coming back to is that when we run national polls, when NPR runs those, we're still like in a country that deeply mistrusts its media. NPR lands on the top when it comes to most trusted. So I'm not going to say there's no ground lost there, that we can't always work to gain more trust. I think listening in situations like this will help us gain that trust. But it's just really hard to point to a newsroom that's doing a better job than NPR is doing right now. And the other thing where I think Mike Pesca and I have some common understanding, I agree to the extent that we've lost audience. And honestly, you're also right that what happens in a small market is much different than what happens in a big market. We haven't really lost any audience, but it just doesn't hit us the same way. But in any case, it's programming. It is absolutely programming. To the extent that I've sent notes to NPR, and I have, and they've been responded to, we've had nice conversations. I think there's work being done internally at NPR to deal with these programming issues. But I just like to see more non-news programming. I mean, part of the problem is that a lot of that's evaporating. We've lost programs that are just entertainment, On Being has moved off of NPR's platform, programs, Car Talk, over the last 5-10 years, we've lost a lot of programs that aren't news based. And I think getting a little bit more of that and then going back to the news, there's a little bit of news fatigue out there that also plays into this. Anyway, I think there's a lot going on, a lot of transition.
All right, let's go to the phones, 800-222-9455. Timothy is calling from Rockford on line 2. Timothy, thanks for calling in.
Yes, hello. I have been a longtime listener ever since I got into the car at 16, started tuning in. What I have noticed with my own listening and everything would be that during the last administration, I seem to have not engaged as much because of the negative environment that the previous administration was creating. So I was kind of...
So you mean the Trump administration, not the NPR leadership you're talking about?
Correct. Yes, that would be correct. And I knew at that time that was kind of hurting my ability to grow with the programming and learning things through things like Science Friday or TED Radio or the Reveal, which are all great educational programs, but due to the previous administration and the negative environment that they created, and then the news environment had to report on that, which turned to be somewhat negative majority. And I noticed that I wasn't then catching my Science Friday or my TED Talks And that was, you know, a little disappointing. I have since started re-listening a lot more since the last presidential election and everything. I would definitely agree with the previous speaker with programming like On Being and, say, Car Talk were great programs. And that would be some stuff that, yeah, would be awesome to hear more of and get more of.
Mike Pesca, just about a minute until we need to take a break here. You tried to rebut Eric in your comments. What is your hypothesis, though? I don't know that you answered that question about why NPR. Do you agree that with Uri Berliner that it's basically this turn toward progressive, you know, mindset in its coverage, or the lack of curiosity, as he put it?
NPR needs to be more interesting to listeners and more relevant to listeners. And a key way to do that is to have more stories and shows with sparkle. That's exactly what shows like, even though one of the hosts of Car Talk is no longer with us, shows that aren't necessarily on the news. But it also needs to be surprising, and it needs to be less doctrinaire. And there was a time, and if when you come back, you want me to cite some statistics because I've done the work. There was a time when the overwhelming majority of the coverage was of a doctrinaire ilk, and I think people just got weary of it. I think that NPR has the highest standards. That is true. It has the highest standards. They do not engage in some of these more chicanerous practices, and the fact that they're regarded more highly is deserved, but also a bit of a referendum on the rest of media. But to me, it is quite clear what NPR needs to do. It needs to be engage with the audience more and cause more delight. And this means getting away from some of the ideological strictures that have, you know, that Uri gets at in his piece and that are real. Whether you want to admit it or not, I think the listeners feel it.
All right. We're going to continue this conversation. 800-222-9455. Let us know what you think. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about public radio. And I want to make a brief correction. Speaking of public media standards, I attributed a comment earlier to Ted Koppel. It was actually Peter Jennings who wrote that line back when ABC News was sold in the 80s, paraphrasing the comic strip Pogo. We have seen the news and it is us. So my apologies for that. And I do regret the error. We are talking, though, today about criticism leveled at NPR, the national news organization in particular, by a former editor there, Uri Berliner, who wrote an essay accusing the leadership and staff of NPR of basically letting a progressive mindset distort their coverage. NPR has lost millions of listeners in recent years, and that is his hypothesis as to why. We're talking about all this with Eric Deggans, who's a TV and media critic at NPR, although here on his own capacity today, not as a spokesman for NPR. Also, Mike Pesca, a longtime former NPR reporter and producer and host of The Gist, the longest running daily news podcast. Jared Johnson is general manager at WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. And Mike Jansen is digital editor at Current, the public media trade publication. And Eric, I want to give you a chance to respond to what we were talking about before the break, the idea that, you know, NPR has lost some of its sparkle. Maybe it's gotten a rigidity in its mindset and the way it approaches stories. What do you think of that critique?
Well, given some of the earlier comments that we heard on this program, what we were hearing was news fatigue. What we were hearing was people wanted to hear programming that wasn't necessarily centered on news coverage at all. And that the coverage during a time of increasing sort of political I don't want to say extremism, but there was more political volatility. There was more conflict. People, seemed to be put off by that, and it made them want to listen to the news less. And that's what I was hearing from the previous comments, the caller that you took, and the station official that you talked to. So, I'm not sure that we have been able to draw this line between news judgment that NPR is making and decline in audience. But what I will say is that I also think that NPR, one reason why we score high on these trust polls is because we try to be careful about how we cover stuff. And being careful can be frustrating, even to people who work at NPR. You know, I've experienced it myself sometimes where, you know, I might want to, you know, come at an issue in a sharper way or in a, you know, in a way that's bolder. But I think our listeners and our supporters expect us to be careful and expect us to be considered. And sometimes that can be frustrating. And it's hard when people get frustrated to hear that, you know, we want to be careful with this. And, you know, the last thing I guess I'll say about all of this is that I think it's important to work hard to try and get at what is actually happening and not talk so much about the stereotypes about NPR. And, you know, what I'm hearing from, I mean, I don't want to mischaracterize what Mike is saying, but what I'm hearing from some people who sort of are taking the side of Yuri, it is a sense that if only NPR could be like it was 5 years ago or 10 years ago or whatever. But I think anybody who's in this business knows that the media industry and the audience and the political climate is completely different now than it was back then. And I think I don't know that it makes a lot of sense to say that NPR should be the way it was, you know, a decade ago to find success in a modern moment. I don't think that that makes a lot of sense. And I think what people are doing is they're looking at, you know, really serious problems and challenges, and they're placing their ideas about ideology and culture war on top of them to try and explain a problem where that might not be the explanation, and where I highly doubt that that's the explanation. And so I think we need to look at this more carefully, and in particular, we need to get away from arguments that are rooted in inaccuracies and try to look more at criticisms that seem to be more accurate.
You know, I've been a reporter for 20 years now. I've been in public radio for 12 years. The first 8 of those were as a State House reporter. And anecdotally, in that time, I definitely feel like the Republican officials that I talk to, right? I spent a lot of time in the State House, obviously, as a State House reporter. I used to hear from Republicans, oh, listen, heard you on the show, heard your State Week talk show that we did when I was at a previous station. And now we have a harder time booking some Republicans on the program because, I don't know, they think it's, I don't want to characterize why, but some won't even come on. Other ones are more adversarial when they join us. I get the sense they're not listening the way they used to be. And part of me, Mike Pesca, maybe you can speak to this, is the media landscape has changed. There's been polarization and audiences are segmenting. Maybe NPR is wise to pick a segment of the audience and try and go after it. Although I suppose the numbers tell.
I don't think that's what's happening. And I really want to say, you know, that I don't think that that's what's happening. I will tell you that personally, what I've experienced as a media critic is that I have done columns where I talk about something, and then Fox News in particular will mischaracterize what I wrote and claim that I was saying something that I was not saying. And then that gets broadcast on a whole network of podcasts and other radio shows and online platforms where they're arguing with what someone else said that I said, not what I actually said. And so then this idea of what NPR is becomes a caricature, and it becomes a stereotype, and it becomes something that's not even based in a fair reading of my coverage. I'm just talking about something that I personally did. And so I can only imagine how that is magnified across other stories, across the network. And so I think sometimes people have an image of what NPR is that isn't even rooted in what we're actually doing, because there are so many media outlets out there that have a vested interest in mischaracterizing what we do.
Well, that's no doubt true, but I'm more concerned with the people who used to listen to NPR or used to listen to it more and now don't, and there is a reason why, and it has to come down to programming. So first of all, that poll that is frequently cited about NPR being the most trusted, it's not as true as it once was. There was a famous poll about 10 years ago, but, you know, Pew polls on this, and among Republicans, NPR is more distrusted than trusted. Okay, fine. Put that aside. But more trusted among Democrats are PBS, the New York Times, the BBC, MSNBC, and the Washington Post. NPR and Time Magazine are each trusted.
But doesn't that go exactly against Yuri's point?
And by the way, I can cite a YouGov,
I can cite
a YouGov poll from 2 years ago that found that NPR was more trusted than CNN and the New York Times Fox News. There's a lot of different polls out there you can cite.
Wait, I don't understand how it goes against Yuri's point that it's leaving Republicans behind and is more progressive if progressives like NPR.
I don't have the numbers you have right in front of you, but weren't you just saying the Democrats actually trust other media more than they trust NPR?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that.
That's how it goes against the point.
Okay, put that on the motto. NPR, not trusted by as many Democrats as MSNBC.
I guess if that's how we want to argue. Yeah.
No, I don't. I think you're engaged. I'm either confused or there's some illogic there. Uri's point is that we're leaving behind a large part of the audience because they're excessively progressive. To some extent, I subscribe. To some extent, I don't. This is what I think was going on, and we haven't talked about it directly. For a period, and this was during the Trump administration, but most acutely after the killing of George Floyd, NPR had a serious push to cover many, if not most, stories through a social justice lens. And a lot of the time this led to great journalism, and I enjoyed many episodes of Code Switch about this, and, you know, I as a listener benefited. But then there were so many stories, and so many stories that, you know, I have the numbers on this. Maybe it's just more the anecdotal stories about the eye roll type story of, you know, an interview with an author who says that looting is good and proper, or the story on Invisibilia, which says we shouldn't do, where the host argued with a person who wants to have a TV show based on trains rolling through the landscape. And she argued back, well, we can't do that because the landscape reminds us of slavery and the slaughter of the indigenous people. And we don't have time for me to say the hundreds of examples, but this is what becomes to listeners a deluge. And I think it was excessive. I mean the focus on all in each 2 hour block of Morning Edition or All Things Considered, there were days when the majority of that was on stories, some of them great reporting and some of them real stretches to expand the definition of whiteness or white supremacy or many interviews with Ibram X. Kendi and Robin DiAngelo. And I just think if you want to say it's because NPR's listeners are older or whiter, at a certain point, they had enough of it. And by the way, the current programming of NPR reflects this. In the last year, if you do a search for the term white supremacy, there have been 39 stories on NPR in the last year that mention this. And in 2020, there were 215 stories. So I don't know which number is right or which number is wrong. I'm just saying there were 4 to 5 times as much of these stories in the summer and the year of 2020.
And once again, we have a criticism that is lacking important context. When George Floyd was murdered by police in 2020, it kicked off an international debate about systemic racism. How does it exist? Does it affect policing? Is it killing people of color? And so, of course, any responsible news organization would try to look into that and would try to explain to people and would try to explain and would try to explain to people. Here's the conversation that's going on. Here's some of the people who have written books that are interesting about this. And here's some of the ideas that are out there that may make us look at things differently, like trains, or may make us look at systems differently, like how education works or how policing works. There was a lot of coverage of systemic racism in 2020 because of the death of George Floyd and because of the impact of that death. Creating international protests. So number one, that's the thing that's going on. But
very
I also want to point out that one of the things that comes from having a more diverse newsroom means you have more diverse perspectives. So there are going to be people who might say, hey, is there a different way to look at a story that we might do about gentrification? Or is there another way to look at a story that we might do about education? And it may present a perspective that you're not used to hearing on NPR. That is not necessarily a failure. That may also be an attempt to try and widen the aperture of stories and perspectives that we have about things that we kind of take for granted and that we've always talked about a certain way.
Right. So my question, that may make some listeners uncomfortable,
but it may also be the byproduct of diversifying your staff and giving people a chance.
All right, I'm gonna break in here and say we are 30,000 feet over the ocean and looking for a place to land with 2 minutes of fuel remaining. Sure. Mike Pesca, you have a couple of sentences to get your final point in there. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so the question is, what is the limiting factor? Can we go too far? Is it possible for an organization, while these world-changing events were going on, to go too far in the direction of presenting this information that at some point exhausted the listeners? And maybe the potential listeners are still on board. They just said, I've heard this so many, many times. And maybe the listener said, I love the stories about policing, but the stories about renaming birds are really a stretch. So it does seem to have, or does specifically have coincided with a huge drop off of listenership. And I think NPR should look at the kinds of stories they do and take into account that you absolutely have to do stories about excessive policing and white supremacy. And those are great. But then the question is, what is the right balance? I think now NPR is getting things into more of a balance that serves the public.
And that is going to have to be the last word on our program today. I want to thank Mike Pesca, host of The Gist, Eric Deggans, TV critic and media critic at NPR, although here in his own capacity, Jared Johnson, general manager at WVIK Quad Cities NPR, and Mike Jansen, digital editor at Current, the public media trade magazine. It's been a spirited discussion. Thank you all so much for being with us and sharing your perspectives. And that's all the time we have for our show today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason.
And our producers, the producers of the show, this show, not the show you heard, are Corey Wara and Joel Patterson. And I'll give my email address again, or the show's email address. This show, The Gist Show, not The 21st Show. Although, I don't know, maybe this is the 21st show of The Gist. You're listening, and it was The Gist on the 21st. Anyway, it's thegist@mikepesca.com. I am Mike Pesca. The Gist is not at Mike Pesca. Mike Pesca is at The Gist. I think you're understanding all of this. We had a nice, compact public radio segment. They laid things out very thoroughly. So a person in their car in, say, Bettendorf, Iowa, could understand. And here I've screwed it all up with my circular recitation of the email address, which is to say the show's email address, which is not my personal email address, but of course it personally does encapsulate my name as the email address is thegist@mikepesca.com. Hey, thanks for listening.